house is only as strong as its foundation. You probably have heard that before. And you as a human being are only as strong as your foundation, which is your feet. This week's episode features Mark Sisson. He founded a company called Primal Nutrition and also Paluva, the shoe company. And what I love about this episode is we're going to talk about health, longevity, foot health, and also you're going to get some insight into what it looks like to truly take your unique gifting and monetize it and create a business, which Mark has done twice. Get ready. This one is a game changer. Oh, you guys are in for a treat on this week's episode of The Higher Self. If you've ever shopped for nutritious mayonnaise and you've seen a product called, what was it? Primal Kitchen. We have the founder of Primal Kitchen and the founder of Paluva Shoes, Mark Sisson. Mark, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today, Danny.
I'm excited. This is going to be a great conversation. Yeah. You know, the name of the podcast is The Higher Self. Mm-hmm. And it's all about essentially achieving your highest version of yourself.
Right.
And I love your story and I love how creative you have been in creating products, services, foods for human beings based off of what you saw was missing.
Right.
And I genuinely believe that all of us have a gift that we can share with the world. So the first question I have to ask you is about Primal Nutrition. How did that start?
Well, Primal Nutrition, which was my original supplement company, started in 97, I had been an athlete. I'd been a top endurance athlete, and I was always looking for ways to enhance my performance, whether it was training methods, new training methods, whether it was dietary interventions, or whether it was supplements. And I was interested at the time. I was also interested in the idea that we get better from training because of the recovery. It's not the work we do as much as it's the time that we recover, the time spent, the rest, the nutrients available. And so I was looking into ways in which we could amp up the recovery process with antioxidants, with vitamins, minerals, and things like that. So I started my first supplement company for me, looking for ways to improve my performance by speeding up my recovery. Because I was working with other athletes through the years, and I had been involved in the Olympic anti-doping movement, I was aware that some athletes were going down the dark path of using restricted performance-enhancing drugs. So I wanted to provide an opportunity for athletes who wanted to be on the straight and narrow to recover using those sorts of supplements. So that's what got me started. I was looking for athletic performance. But really early on, I realized that most of my customers were people interested in the anti-aging process. These were people who had already read some of the magazines, some of the books about antioxidants, anti-aging, reactive oxygen species, all of the things that can go wrong with a bad diet or with stress, and how you can perhaps alleviate some of that by taking extra supplemental vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, phytonutrients, and things like that. So that's how Primal Nutrition started. Over the years, as I was using a blog that I'd started called Mark's Daily Apple, where I was writing about training methods and sleep and sun exposure and dietary intervention and all sorts of things having to do with health and fitness, I started selling fewer and fewer supplements because I was writing so much about natural foods and natural ways in which we could extract the best benefits from real food, that I realized that I was writing so much about food, I ought to be making food supplements and food things that you put on food, sauces, dressings, toppings. So that's what was the genesis behind Primal Kitchen and the mayonnaises and the salad dressings and the pasta sauces, was I was looking for something that I could put on good food that made it taste better and made it interesting and that I didn't have to use sparingly, you know, that I could feel good about putting on the food. Because, you know, so often the sauces and the dressings and the toppings that we have put on food historically are like, they're too full of, you know, fats and oils and sugars and bad ingredients. So I wanted to create a product that, again, that fit my own personal specifications for what I would like to see, with the assumption that there would be a few other people who would want to purchase something similar.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it took off.
It went so quickly. I mean, we introduced our first product in March of 2015. I went to my manufacturer and I said, like, this is, I got this new idea. It's an avocado oil based mayonnaise. I think it's going to be a hit, but it's going to have to cost three times as much as regular mayonnaise. So I'm not sure that we're going to have a market for it. What's the least amount that we can make in this first batch commercially? Because I don't want to have this stuff on my shelf,
right, on my shelf for the rest of my life.
For the rest of my life. And my manufacturer said, well, we can, the smallest batch we can do is 12,000 jars.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, geez, okay. And we sold out in 10 days.
Wow.
So that's when I really knew that we were onto something.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And then you sold how many years later?
It's already close to 5 years now that I've sold to Kraft Heinz. And it was a great sale. It was a great partnership. They let us alone. I'm still very much involved in the company. I'm still, you know, involved in R&D. I still am the face of the brand. I'm still overseeing and making sure that all of the things that we put in place don't get compromised. I mean, that was a fear that people have when you take a small brand, an authentic brand, and then it gets purchased by big food. Is it they're going to corrupt it? That's not always the case, and it's less and less the case now. Most of the big food companies are like, we really don't know what we're doing. We have, you know, 50 different brands within our portfolio. You happen to be the best one. We want to see what you did to get there, and we want to learn from you. We don't want to jeopardize this great brand that you've built. So we'll just stand back, let your team do what they did best. So all they've done is given us access to more distribution, financial resources, high level advice and things like that. It's been an amazing partnership.
I think that's, you know, a beautiful story. And I'm so happy to hear that a lot of these, you know, big brands are starting to become more conscious about food, because ultimately the winners are going to be society.
Yes.
Basically with this type of a partnership.
No, I think that's one of the things that they're all recognizing as they see some of the legacy brands that I grew up with that don't have the best ingredients in yeah. their panel. And they see that the market share is falling off and they're losing market share to more aggressive, progressive brands that are identifying key nutrients that they ought to just get rid of. Things like industrial seed oils that have been pervasive through all processed food for the last 50 or 60 years. And so one of my missions with Primal Kitchen was I wanted to change the way the world eats. And part of that mission was to literally to encourage other companies to do what I was doing, which was to take a look at the ingredient panel and go, we have to get rid of this. This has been in here too long, and we have to exchange it with something that's demonstrably better for you, say, on the ingredient panel. So I feel gratified that in changing the way the world eats, if I brought along 50 other companies that were sort of imitating, you know, our first pass at this, I win. That's great. And yeah. Everybody wins, right?
Well, it's interesting because as you were saying to me, you know, about the ingredient deck and how back then, you know, so many of our dressings and et cetera had bad ingredients, I thought to myself, it's not like that anymore. I think you had a big role in it.
I'd like to think so. I mean, it continues to upgrade, right? In terms of the quality of ingredients across the board. It's a long slog. I mean, like I said, there are a lot of companies that compete on price alone. And so they'll buy the cheapest ingredients that are on the market that week or that month when they're manufacturing. So you might look at an ingredient panel of a salad dressing and it in parentheses, it says may contain one of the following, you know, soybean oil, corn oil, canola oil, safflower. And why it may contain one or all of them is it depends on which was the cheapest at the time that they manufactured it.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So we took a look at this and we said, look, let's just make products that are really demonstrably the best in that category, that check off all the boxes. There are no harmful ingredients. They're great ingredients, you know, what we would say, call maybe superfoods, and that taste great.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And speaking about changing the way the world eats.
Yeah.
And talking about, you know, seed oils. Mm-hmm. I know as a Hispanic, you know, like canola, mm-hmm. it's just, Everywhere. Mean, like we're raised off that stuff.
Yeah.
It was one of the original things that I cut out. Quite honestly, I'm one of the types of people that I don't need to know the research. I don't need to know the science. I just, you tell me it's bad. There's probably a reason why you're telling me it's bad, yeah, and I'm just done with it type of deal. Yeah. But why? Because I know so many people still use seed oils.
Right.
I haven't in years, and I try to avoid restaurants for this mm-hmm. same reason, or at least not, you know, not health conscious restaurants. Why are seed oils so bad for the human body?
Well, you know, all these things exist on a spectrum. And when we say try your best to avoid seed oils, we're not necessarily saying that all seed oils are poison and you should, you know, without any other thought, get rid of all of them. These exist on a spectrum, and some are, so many of the seed oils are processed from seeds, from grains, which aren't necessarily, you don't think of fats or oils coming from these things. You don't squeeze them with your hand and they don't drip oil. They have to be highly processed with harsh solvents to extract the oils and gone through a, you know, a deodorizing process and a cleansing process. And in the manufacture of them, there's alterations to some of these fatty acid profiles that wind up being harmful to the human body if they get incorporated into cell membranes, for instance. In and of themselves, some of them are not, in small quantities, they may not be that harmful. But if you look at how many of these oils are used, for instance, in frying. So now you have fried foods, especially fast foods, where a vat is sitting with industrial seed oils churning up all day long, every day, and they're recycling, and it continues to burn, and it continues to produce free radicals more and more. I call it free radical soup that mm. they're making here. So those are clearly areas where you should probably avoid, you know, any sort of foods that come from these vats of industrial seed oils. You know, when they exist in your salad dressing, you know, don't agonize over that quite so much. But you know, there's also typically these oils have a higher content of omega-6 fats, and omega-6 tends to be largely pro-inflammatory, whereas omega-3 fats and oils tend to be anti-inflammatory. And so, throughout our lives, we want to try to maintain a balance of omega-6 and omega-3 fats. Yeah, so they tend to be pro-inflammatory, and in looking for a balance between omega-6 and omega-3, the easiest way to do this is to get rid of the omega-6 part of that equation.
Okay.
You know, you can take omega-3 fish oil supplements and kind of counter it that way, but I think it's just best to avoid industrial seed oils. People like Dr. Kate Shanahan would say, for instance, that some of these oils get incorporated into they don't get combusted, right? They don't get burned up as fats, the way saturated fat gets burned up and combusted in the muscles. They get incorporated into cell membranes where they have the effect of maybe not being as effective as naturally occurring omega-6 fats would be in the cell membrane, right? If these are Frankenfats, if they've been altered in the production process, they might not operate on the cell membrane the same way. So they may lead to maybe insulin resistance, an increase in insulin resistance, for mm-hmm. instance, or an increased systemic inflammation, things like that. So, you know, we've been suggesting avoiding seed oils, industrial seed oils, for a long time. It looks like it's getting better. I would say, to your point about the restaurant thing, you know, frying in these oils is probably the most egregious abuse of the oils.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. So if you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you'll know that I'm a strong believer and advocate for plant medicine and its ability to awaken and heal the mind, body, and soul. It's a belief that is deeply rooted in my own personal experience with both ayahuasca and psilocybin mushrooms. And many of you for years have always asked me, you know, Danny, where do I go? Who can I trust? And there is only one place I would ever recommend or put my name behind, and that is Reunion. Reunion is a place where you could set yourself free from whatever is holding you back from living the life of your dreams. It's a beachfront, beautiful property that is in Costa Rica. And what I love about it is that it's not for profit. And this is the only thing that they focus on is the preservation and the safe utilization of these beautiful, wonderful medicines. And I only feel comfortable putting my name behind it because I am personal friends and have journeyed with some of the members of the facilitating team. Guys, I'm honored to have aligned myself with them to create the Higher Self Scholarship Fund. It's a fund whose purpose is in helping people who don't have the means to experience these medicines and yet have the desire to. And every time one of you books a retreat with Reunion, $100 from every booking is going to go into this fund, and we will be sharing this money with people on a monthly and bi-monthly basis. So help me help others by using the code DANNYREUNION when you go to register to experience your own life transformational journey. To find out more, go to reunionexperience.org and get ready. Mark, I know, you know, not only are you well known for primal nutrition, but just health in general. You're 70 years old.
Yeah.
You look like you feel great, yeah. Right? And, you know, I'm on a journey right now, and I think many of us are of, you know, when we talk about longevity, trying to understand what are the best foods that are going to help us get there, or what's the best diet that will help us,
yeah.
You know, be able to live a long, active life, right? Mm-hmm. You're about 30 years ahead of me. Mm-hmm. So as someone who's kind of been there, right, what's the diet that you follow?
Well, I mean, I follow a whole foods diet.
Mm-hmm.
It's largely meat-based, so I'm always seeking protein first. I want to get my protein requirements kind of banged out before I start dropping down and looking at other things that I could add to my diet. I'm more concerned about what people should eliminate from their diet than maybe what they should include. So,
okay.
You know, I eliminated grains for the most part about 25 years ago, and it changed my life. So I had
all grains.
Pretty much all grains.
Could you yeah. break that down for me?
What? Yeah. So as an endurance athlete, I was fueling myself on a very high carbohydrate diet for years and years and years, decades. And in order to get that amount of carbohydrate into your system, you have to consume a lot of grains, a lot of wheat, corn, barley, oats, a lot of pasta, bread, cereal. And that was how we thought we needed to fuel the body to be able to run 100 miles a week for years at a time. I realized after I retired due to injury and illness that a lot of my ailments were diet related. So the inflammation that I had in my hips all the time was diet related. The arthritis I had in my feet was partly diet related. It was partly related to the shoes I was wearing. I had irritable bowel syndrome from the age of 14 to 47, and that was, again, largely a result of a grain-based diet. So when I eliminated grains, just on a, not a whim, but an experiment, I did a 30-day experiment. I said, well, I'm going to give up grains for 30 days and see what happens. The arthritis went away. The tendonitis in my hips went away. The irritable bowel syndrome went away forever, and that was life-changing to me.
Hmm.
So this was the moment, my aha moment was when I said to myself, wow, if I thought that I was a person who could eat grains without any problems for the rest of my life, and I gave them up for 30 days and I had this amazing transformation, how many tens of millions of people in this country might have the same problems? I should write about that. I should investigate further. So I started to look into, you know, whether or not you have celiac disease, which is clearly a huge reaction to gluten and to the folded proteins in grains, whether or not you have celiac, most people still have some sort of a sensitivity to gluten mm-hmm. or to zines or to these folded proteins in grains. So when I would suggest that my giving up grains for the most part, not entirely, I still have the occasional piece of bread with great butter on it or something. But giving up grains, giving up sugar. Sugar is like people have said it for 10 or 20 years, but I think the less sugar you burn in a lifetime, the longer you'll live and the healthier you will be. Mm-hmm. So giving up pies, cakes, candies, cookies, sweetened beverages, artificially sweetened, including in all of that, that has a tremendous impact on your glucose metabolism, on your fat metabolism, on your energy levels throughout the day. on your, your risk for heart disease. So many of these risk factors happen as a result of food choices that we make. So it's mostly what you decide to give up that has the greatest impact on your diet. Then when you give up the grains and the industrial seed oils for the most part and the sugars, you kind of come down to a small list, Danny, of like, you know, meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, seeds, vegetables, fruit, maybe some starchy tubers. But these are real foods, right?
Right.
So in terms of a longevity diet, from there, I would look at the amounts of food that you take in, right? Some people take in way more food than they ought to. Mm. And they can maybe get away with it. Maybe they don't show it. Maybe they don't gain so much weight. But as a result of taking in more food than you probably need, it may be that your body is revving at a higher metabolism, trying to burn it off and get rid of it. And people would look at that and go, wait, high metabolism. I want to have a fast metabolism because I love to eat, right? Well, like, why wouldn't I want a fast metabolism? Well, a fast metabolism is, it's like having a Ferrari and you're, you know, at a stoplight revving at 9,000 RPMs.
It's right.
Just, you don't want to do that, right? You want to have all the energy you want for sure. And you want to maintain muscle mass and all of this, but you don't necessarily, need or want to have a fast metabolism. So I think people, and I've told this story before, but a lot of people go through life with this sort of overarching question, like food is everywhere and I love food. What's the most amount of food I can eat and not gain weight, right? What's the biggest meal I can have? How much of this plate can I finish and not gain weight or not feel like I'm uncomfortable or I'm I've overdone it? And from meal to meal, people have this sort of little mantra like, yeah, I would finish my plate and I that big piece of cheesecake, it's dessert. Dessert means I deserve it because I finished my plate. So people, you know, I think tend to see what they can get away with in terms of food. So my idea was, and my philosophy is, you know, what's the least amount of food I can eat and maintain muscle mass or even put on muscle, have all the energy I want, never get sick, and most importantly, not be hungry. Like if I'm hungry, then it doesn't work. But if I've overcome my hunger to the point that I know when to stop eating and I can push the plate of food away or box it up and take it home or whatever, save it for another meal, then I found that point at which I can, I have the energy, I have the muscle mass, I don't get sick, I don't gain weight over time. And it's very empowering to a lot of people. And then my body revs at a low enough temperature and metabolism that I feel like I'm going to live forever the way a tortoise or an elephant would live forever versus a hummingbird, which has a very high metabolism and just, you know, lasts a couple of days or a couple of months or whatever.
I get that. You know, it's funny because Dave was just here. And he's, I think, a little more inflexible, where one of the things that we were just talking about out here outside the studio is that, you know, you'd like to enjoy life.
Yeah.
Right. And so what does a typical day for you look like?
Well, so in terms of food, I typically don't eat breakfast because I'm not hungry for it. I'm a fat burner, right? I work well on fats and ketones. I'll have a cup of coffee to start the day. I'll have a small-ish lunch, typically a salad with a steak on it or salmon or something like that. Maybe some steamed vegetables instead of the salad, but certainly focused around the protein complement of that meal. I don't snack much in the afternoon. I might have a handful of macadamia nuts. Again, they're high-fat kind of things. And then at dinner, which I kind of focus on as my main delightful meal of the day. Like dinner is a real kind of ritual for me. I want dinner to be special.
Yeah.
So I will have, a big steak or I'm in town for this. I went and had some amazing lamb chops last night. I did have butter squash soup, which was incredible. It was a fabulous restaurant. And so because as I explained to you, I want to enjoy every bite of food I put in my mouth, and I'm not excluding, even though I'm sort of keto-ish, I don't exclude carbs just on a dogmatic basis. Last night on the menu was this amazing soup. And I split it. It was a big bowl, but I split it with my wife, and it was fabulous. I'm so glad I had it, right? And then I had vegetables and some wine, and that's like the perfect meal for me.
Yeah. So that's so essentially it's two meals a day.
Yeah.
With a little bit of macadamia nuts. That's it.
Or some snack. It could be chomps. You know, it could be a meat stick or some kind of a protein / healthy fat bar kind of thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, some days I go to Europe a lot in the summer. We spend 3 or 4 months in Europe. I have breakfast in Europe. It just feels right. You know, But even on those days, I'll probably only have two meals a day because I feel like any more than two meals a day is literally too much food for me.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sit well. I don't feel like I'm able to do the activities that I want to do with a full stomach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, that's what feels right to me. The difference is that I may be snacking a little bit too much, you know.
Well, I mean, if what feels right is your first meal, do you have a compressed eating window? Is it like 16 hours?
I'm normally, like, I haven't eaten yet today,
yeah.
But I'm normally, like, right after this, I'll probably eat. You know, okay. It's normally 12 yeah. to 6.
That's fine, but 12 to 6, then snacking is sort of allowed in that window, yeah. right? But if you snacked in the morning, then you'd say, well, you didn't really not eat. You had a small breakfast, which you called a snack.
Sure. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I love that. So now I want to get to the topic which excites me the most, and I'm going to tell you why. I had this big spiritual awakening, right? I did ayahuasca, right? I read in or listened to one of your episodes. You haven't done it, you know. For me, it was like, whoa. And during that spiritual awakening, I started to become way more aware of things than I was before. I felt like, you know, in my previous life, I just did what everybody told you to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I wore the clothes that I was told to wear. I you know, ate the foods that I was told to eat.
Sure.
And I wore the shoes that I was told to wear.
Good segue, Danny. I like this.
That's really good, right? Yeah. And so then I started to notice, you know, little by little that my feet were really jacked up. Mm-hmm. In particular, my pinky, the small toe. The small toe just kind of looked like all, you know, shriveled up. And
oh, it looks like it's going to fall off on some people.
Exactly, right? And then, so I started to look into better shoes, right? And I just stopped wearing Nikes in general because I don't want to bash Nike, but I became aware that they're not selling you, just like in most restaurants, they're not selling you food for the sake of your health. They've created a product that they want to churn out and make as much profit as possible.
Of course.
This is just business, right? Well, Nike is selling you an image, a brand, not a shoe. And I just started noticing, like, some of these Nikes, they're cut in the middle to the point where it's like my entire foot was hanging off of the side. I was just not aware that this was a bad thing,
right.
You know? Until I started noticing when I had my baby girl and I started noticing at my young boy's feet.
Perfect feet.
It's like my daughter, I touch the center of her foot and her entire foot, like every toe, it works the same way that my hands do. And because I'm so into like getting the best out of life, I started to think, oh my God, there's something to these shoes.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine, Aaron Alexander, which I think you know, he gave me a list of approved podiatrist shoes. I didn't even know there was a thing called a podiatrist. And I started off transitioning to Brooks running shoes. Mm-hmm. They gave me way more room, so forth and so on. And then I heard about Palubas, right? And I want to spend a lot of time talking about this because I don't feel like people give their feet enough attention. It is the foundation of the body, right? And if your feet are off, your ankles are going to be off, your knees are going to be off, your glutes are going to be off, but it could be the source of your lower back pain, right? How did you start this journey on foot health? How did it start for you?
Well, it started as a runner. I was a marathoner in the 70s. I actually started running in the 60s. I was a track athlete in the 60s in high school, and I ran in really thin, flat shoes, either Chuck Taylor's or Onitsuka Tigers, which was the only real racing flat you could buy at the time. These were minimal. These were the original minimalist shoes. And what was interesting is you could feel the ground when you ran on uneven surfaces. You could feel on a road that had potholes, or on you got off the side of a road or on a trail, you could feel everything underneath the shoes. And the feet would adapt to that, and they would not just get stronger, but they would roll a little bit. And by the time you weight the front foot in a minimalist shoe, the brain already knows how to flex the knee, how to bend the foot, how to torque the ankle, how to do all of the things it needs to do to absorb the shock of that or the impact of that footfall. Well, along come Nike in the 70s, and I was a Nike runner. I was using the racing flats with their and then training in the really thick cushion shoes, and I got injuries. And I'm like, I'm not supposed to get injured. I'm like I'm doing all the right things, and I'm a fit guy, and I know how to run. But I would get knee injuries, and I would get hip injuries. I got through a career of running, and I ran some pretty fast marathons. But ultimately, it was these injuries that forced me to not race anymore. I got osteoarthritis in my feet, tendonitis in my hips. As I said, some of it was diet, but it was a combination of the diet and the footwear. So, you know, cut to years later, I'm talking about health and fitness and diet and exercise, and I'm talking about a very complex synergistic life where everything fits together, where the sleep, you know, you got to get enough sleep and sun exposure. We all need sun exposure. We all have to go out and play and use our brains. We have to eat right. We have to avoid traumatic, risk. We have to eliminate risk in our lives. And foot health was always in the back of my mind. Like how come no one has really addressed foot health this way? Well, in 2009 or 10, a book came out called Born to Run. It was a great book, and it really looked at how humans have this ability to run, but only really if you run the right way, which is with a midfoot strike, which is how all top runners tend to run. A
midfoot strike.
Not a heel strike. You know, most citizen runners today, the tens of millions, land on their heel and roll off.
Right.
You walk like that all day long. You're supposed to walk like that. But when it comes to running, you should not run like with a heel strike.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely. And so what happened was, over the years, the shoe companies, the running shoe companies, made thicker and thicker soles because they knew that people were heel striking.
Right.
And it was, it was so much shock to the body that the only way to, rather than train them how to run the right way, they would encourage them to run the wrong way by putting thick cushion heels underneath them. So now you're running on pillows instead of feeling the ground underneath you. So it begat this decades-long movement of people becoming runners and getting into running, but still no decrease in running injuries because if you run inappropriately, if you run, if you don't run on with a midfoot strike and run light on your feet and minimize the impact of every time you land, it adds up over a career of running. So I took a look at this. I was originally an adherent of the first five-toed shoes that came out, and they were fine. They were good.
What was it?
Vibram had the first.
Vibram. Okay.
And it was great. And I was I had many pairs of them, and I wore them everywhere. But I felt that there was always something. Like, that was the pendulum swinging all the way to the other side. It was so minimalist.
Too thin.
Not enough support. I couldn't really walk long distances in them without getting bone bruises and things like that. So I kind of set that aside and went about my food business for years and years. And then when I sold my food company to Kraft, I'm like, okay, now is the time to address this thing that's been nagging at me since I was a runner in the 70s, and that is foot health. Like, people, as you said, people don't get that your connection with Earth is through your feet. Mm. And even if you sit on your butt all day long and you're at a desk or what, you still walk around. You still have to get from here to there. You still have to spend time. And if you play sports, oh my gosh, you're totally dependent on this connection that you have with the ground. So I looked at, like, what is it that ideally we'd be walking barefoot? Right.
Sure.
We evolve barefoot. Your kids are born barefoot. They have these amazing feet that work like hands, and they grab things, and they are supposed to feel every change in terrain. Every time you step on a different surface, the toes are supposed to move differently and feel it and respond differently. And you're supposed to walk you know, push off on the big toe and all these things that we're supposed to do, we don't. And we don't because, number one, we've created this civilization where there's concrete and pavement and glass and tile floors and hardwood floors and marble floors, and everything around us is either too hard or too sharp for us to walk on. So my thought was, how do I recreate a barefoot experience with a shoe that's, number one, the most comfortable shoe you'll ever wear, number two, functional in that it allows the small muscles of your feet to articulate and to work and to get stronger, and number three is stylish. I mean, that was the other issue I had with the other companies, is I didn't feel compelled to want to wear them with an outfit or whatever. So my son and I founded this company, Paluva. It's already 3.5 years ago. Started doing R&D for a year and a half. Started doing working models about 2 years ago. I spent a year wearing the model that you're wearing right now. Put 650 miles on that, trekking through France and the south of southern Europe and on pavement concrete, up craggy rocks and things like that. And it was like, oh my God, this is exactly the shoe that I've always envisioned. It gives you the feeling of walking barefoot on a putting green. Like, barefoot on concrete, I don't care how trained you are. You know, and Aaron Alexander is another one. He goes barefoot a lot, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to walk 4 miles on concrete without paying for it, right?
Sure.
So I wanted a shoe that gave you this sense of walking barefoot on a putting surface so that you could actually stand on your feet all day. People work out in the gym in these. They do heavy leg days in these. I have a lot of bodybuilders using this just for lunges and squats and deadlifts and things like that. I've got off-road trail runners who don't run in these. They could, but they're not trained to. But they trek. They'll do 5-hour ruck with a backpack on with the Paluvas over varied terrain, and they get the training effect on their feet without the pounding that they would get from running. So then when they put on their running shoes and they go race, they're feeling better off for having done that.
Right.
So it's we've got thousands of customers who are just really satisfied with the effects of this. One of the things I noticed early on was that once you experience real toe freedom and you feel what this is like to have your toes be able to spread out, we call it splay, and not just side to side, but articulate up and down.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to wear regular shoes again.
Mark, as you're saying that, I'm feeling it right now. Just the freedom that my feet feel.
Yeah.
This week's episode is brought to you by the community. Picture a world of limitless potential growth, regardless of your age, your gender, your background, or any of the things that you always hear will stop you. Step into our community. It's your pathway to self-improvement. It allows you to enjoy boundless access to all of your favorite topics and the things that you want more information on that you hear in the podcast. And quite frankly, guys, it's like having a personal coach right at your fingertips, all for less than the cost of 2 Starbucks coffees a month. Why wait? Go to DannyMorrell.com/community to embark on your journey towards the life you've always dreamed of. Join the community today and transform your personal growth into a remarkable reality. Go to DannyMorrell.com/community now. And I got to tell you, I was in London where all of this kind of started coming to me even more. And I caught myself at the gym. I've been working on my handstands.
Yes.
And yoga. And, you know, you just want to be barefoot.
Yes.
You want to be barefoot, yeah. Right? And so I caught myself so often being a weirdo at the gym, walking around with my shoes.
Yes.
Because I didn't have...
Yes.
I didn't want to give up the feeling and the sensation of
being
barefoot.
It is the connection that you have. People think, like, if you took your thumb and you just put it over like this all day long, if you taped it to your index finger, and then you said, okay, now I'm going to type and I'm going to do all the things I do, you couldn't do it.
Right.
Well, you know, your big toe is the most important toe of your foot. And now what are you going to do? You're going to scrunch it against all the others in your regular shoes and then expect that you're going to have regular balance, like really good balance. Imagine when you're doing the handstands and the yoga poses, imagine doing those with oven mittens on, right?
Sure.
You can't feel what's going on. So the idea of toe freedom, of what we call the big toe articulation and the big toe alignment are so important. It's sort of, we're saying foot health is the new sleep, right? It's like sleep's been the thing for the last 5 years. Okay, we got sleep handled. Let's move on to foot health, because so many people, like 78% of people, complain of foot pain in their lifetime. Runners, 50% of runners are injured at any one point in time. The NFL only has 32% of their athletes injured at any one time, right? So all these things that we depend on our feet for, and then we sort of just, it must be the way it has to be. No one's solved this issue before.
But Mark, it's because, and I want to challenge all of you listening, because think about what Mark is saying with feet, with every aspect of your life. It's that we are in a society that creates these things for us.
Yes.
These houses, these cars, these food products, these drinks, these beverages. And, the human being is the unconscious human being is the most profitable business on planet Earth.
That's well stated.
It really is.
Yeah,
if you really think about it.
Unconscious human being.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then at some point in time, you've got to make the decision for you and your family to become conscious and aware of what's happening. Like, look at your feet. If you have a bunion, why do you have a bunion? If your pinky toe is like stuck to the other one, why is that? And if any of you have babies, for crying out loud, just go look at the, just go touch them in the middle, and you'll see it's so alive. And then if you want to live a long, beautiful life and you want to experience the best that life has to offer, well, then why wouldn't you want that or start that process with your feet? Which, think about it spiritually, it's the foundation of everything.
It's the foundation. And when we talk about longevity, I have two real major litmus tests for quality of life, because longevity without quality of life is meaningless. I have relatives going through horrible times right now because the quality of life is just, it's so bad that it's like, what's the point, really? Quality of life. Number one, mobility. Your ability to walk across the street to a neighbor's house and have a cup of coffee, or to walk to town, or to walk to board a plane and then get off the plane in another country and take a tour of all the churches in the new country. All of that's dependent on foot health and foot strength and mobility and balance and agility and all these things that start with healthy feet.
Well, Mark, I'm thinking about one of the biggest causes of death is old people falling.
Yes.
Because they don't have balance. And I mean, just think about this. You'll have way more balance like this than you would like that.
It seems so intuitively obvious, right? And yet people say, well, but I buy wide shoes. Well, the shoes are wide at the metatarsal, at the midpoint, and then they still crunch the toes together at the end of the shoe, which defeats the entire purpose of this, right? So, and just to complete that thought on longevity, so the two things are mobility and access to memory, access to, to be able to have a conversation and remember things. So those are the two real longevity markers for me. But the mobility thing is huge. And the ability to, again, to move through time and space is one of the reasons that I'm the biggest fan of walking right now. So I would tell people who've asked me, what's the single best exercise I can do? It's walking. Okay. And then the response I'll get is, I would like to walk, but my feet hurt. Okay, now we see the issue, right? Like, people should be walking an hour a day, hour and a half a day, and they should be loving it, and they should be embracing it. And one of the things that happened with me with Paluvas is once we created this particular shoe, and we have different styles, this particular shoe, it makes me want to walk. Literally, when I'm outside, I can feel every time my foot, I roll over from the heel onto the front of my foot, I feel the toes articulating, I feel them splaying, I feel them getting stronger. And it's such an empowering feeling. So a lot of people start with the Paluvas. They're like, I don't know if I'm going to like them, but I'll go walk the dog with them. Great. That's the best, the first best experience is to go walk the dog in the Paluvas. But shortly thereafter, people are saying, I have so many people buy multiple pairs now. We make them in a leather. Danny, we have this is a work shoe. This is a leather lace up, right? It's made to look like a real shoe, and it is a real shoe, and it's high quality Napa leather. So I wear that to, I'll put on a
business functions or whatever.
Yeah. Yes. And weddings and funerals and whatever. It's a little bit sturdier than the one you're wearing. So it's not designed to be taken off road. but it's still only 1.2 centimeters from the heel to the, that's kind of a you know, a, just made to look like.
Do you have those on, in an 11 by any chance?
I do.
Like, on you somewhere here?
No, no. Get you some. Yeah. I'll get you some.
Well, because
right
my 3-day seminar is this week.
Oh, wow.
I legitimately want to wear them.
Okay. And we make them, those are in gray and tan and black. And then we make a, this is called the Miami. This is a casual loafer.
That's oh, these
the one
are
that
nice.
I tool around in most days when in the house. We've got a bunch more coming out. And my point is here that when you realize the freedom that you get with stronger feet, and you won't want to wear regular shoes. So we had to come up with shoes for every occasion.
Got it.
Right. So now, ladies, don't stop wearing your high heels. I mean, it looks great. Yeah. So, you know, but only on occasion. And then when you're not wearing them, work out in the Puluvas. And,
for sure.
Yeah.
Mark, you know, one of the things that I try to help people with, I have such a passion for financial freedom.
Yes.
Because, how do I say that? I'm just going to say it the way it sounds. But, you know, I came from poverty.
Yes.
I came from, you know, the ghetto, like literally the ghettos of Southern California. I can remember living in New York, standing on at the WIC line to get our family the free cheese. And, you know, us as a culture, Hispanics, we've also have been taught that, you know, if we're going to be successful, it's by winning the lotto, by being an athlete, or,
yeah,
you know, the government is, you know, it's stacked against us, whatever all the stories are. And I did it first through real estate is how I first found my financial freedom. And now it's through, you know, my gift, my offering to the world and helping people to reconnect to their hearts. I always try to tell people, like, you have a unique gift. A unique gift, a unique offering to the world. And your job is to find that gift and then monetize it. And when you're doing that, it's like you're changing your life and you're helping other people to change theirs. You've done it twice.
Yeah.
Right? You've done what most people don't do in a lifetime twice. Talk to me about that. And then if there's somebody out there listening who's having a hard time with this, or maybe the limiting beliefs around starting a business.
Yep.
You know, how could you help them with that?
So, you know, I grew up in a poor fishing village in Maine. And, you know, the story is we were poor, we just didn't know it. It was, you know, there's one summer, I was an entrepreneur early on. I mowed lawns when I was 12 and I shoveled snow and I made Christmas wreaths and I was painting houses by the age of 14 or 15. And one summer I made more money in the summer that my dad made the entire year. So, I mean, but it was great growing up there. And it was great that the adversity of the cold winters in Maine and the, you know, that Puritan work ethic that they talk about, right? So, but with that in mind, I've sort of had a little bit of a scarcity mindset. I'm just laying a groundwork here. And security was always a big deal for me, finding that security. When I, I would say if I were to identify my gift, it's taking complex ideas and explaining them in ways that people can understand. So my books, I started writing books, 1981, I wrote the Runner's World Triathlon training book. So I was a fourth place finisher at Ironman in the early days. That was enough for me to have enough information to write a book about training for Ironman. I wanted to educate people on how to do something that I knew how to do and learn and benefit from my mistakes. So my gift has been literally to benefit, to allow other people to benefit from my mistakes by educating them in how the body works primarily, and how choices that we make in life can impact our lives based on that information. So I'm not here telling people I have the only way. I'm here telling people I have a way. I've tried it. I've done the research behind it. It's worked for me and a lot of people that I know. If you'd like to try it, I am here to help you understand why it works, how to implement it, and things like that. So that's kind of been my gift, is that of being able to educate people from this complex, you know, I went to Williams College, got a degree in biology. I was pre-med, so I had that kind of experience of a little bit of science and a little bit of liberal arts, and you know what I mean? So I've, but to your point, everybody's got their unique, special complement of different things they do. It doesn't even have to be one thing. It could be a number of different things that when you put them together, you go, well, I'm the best guy in the world who can teach people how to play golf and shoot snooker and cook, you know, sea bass, whatever. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then you can monetize that.
And then you monetize it. And you know, it. That's what makes, you know, entrepreneurialism so exciting, is that there is no one right way to do it. There's a lot of choices. And as I tell young entrepreneurs, I mean, I'm 70. I tell my kids, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up until I was 47. And then I changed my mind again when I was 61. and it's, you know, it's, I lived my life. I had a great time the whole time. I raised a family. I spent time with the kids. I coached Little League. I ref soccer. I went to every practice. I taught them how to boogie board. I taught them how to snowboard. I had a great time, a great family life. And I built a business, always with the idea that I was confident enough in my special sauce, or my secret sauce, that I could monetize it.
I love that. And speaking of kids, how does it feel to start a business with your son?
It's amazing. It's better than I would have anticipated. I mean, he's a, you know, really smart kid. He's 30. And we're having a blast, and I kind of thrown him into the fire. I mean, he's basically the CEO, and he's running the company.
Good for him.
And I'm, you know, he's taking on some of the stress. My wife is like, why are you doing that, Tim? I'm like, this is part of the process.
That's it. Yeah.
But we're having a blast doing it. We're closer than we've ever been. We were always close, but now we're like, you know, we have 2-hour-long conversations, philosophical conversations that have to do with business, but spill over into real life.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So I literally want a pair of these in every style.
Okay.
Whatever I have to do, I'm going to wear them.
Yeah.
We've got 1,000 people flying in from all over the world to my event. I want to wear those. I think they'll just go a little bit. These feel like more like trainers.
Those are trainers.
These are trainers.
That's called the Strand for people who are, you know, and we'll do a, I want to call it Higher Self 15 for a 15% off kind of thing on your site. We'll just remind, we'll tell Casper,
okay,
but we'll do Higher Self 15.
Beautiful.
Because the Strand is the trainer. The Napa is the leather work shoe, the, you know, more dressy shoe that you're talking about.
And which was the Miami? Those are sick.
The Miami, they really are.
It's got a little Cuban flair to it.
Absolutely. It's the Miami, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So let's see if we can, what we can do to get you fixed up on that for sure.
Okay, cool.
But you're going to love these.
I'm just the kind of, like, once I see the better way, I don't know how to go backwards. You know, I really don't. So Peluva.com.
Yes. Peluva.com.
And if you use code
Higher Self 15,
they'll get 15% off.
Yeah.
Ah, done deal.
Yeah.
Done deal. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Danny.
Yeah. And that's it for this week's episode of The Higher Self. I am loving my Peluvas, and I think you will as well. And honest to God, just, if you need any proof that this is a real, real issue, just go look at a baby in your family. Go look at their feet and then ask yourself, why aren't my feet like that? And I think it'll lead you right to Peluvas. So we'll see you next week on The Higher Self. Thanks for watching this week's episode of The Higher Self. If you heard something in this week's episode that caused you to think maybe, just maybe, there was a higher potential for your life, maybe there was a potential to earn and receive financial freedom, to attract the relationship of your dreams, or to improve your health, that's what we specialize in. We help wonderful human beings like yourself to unravel all of the limiting thoughts, feelings, and emotions that you've been living through so that you can finally tap into your life's truest potential. If you'd like to talk more about that, we invite you to join us on Instagram or Facebook and email us the word discover more, And when my team sees that, they will reach out to you, send you the details of how we could help you on your pathway to a life of abundance, fulfillment, and creating the absolute life of your dreams. Message us right now the words Discover More Now on Instagram or Facebook, and we'll see you soon.